We're talking about tall ships on this edition of Wisconsin Weekend. I'm Kate Archer. Ken, thanks for being here. The Green Bay downtown riverfront is dramatic and historic with these ships. Leitch Memorial Park is where it's at. Nine ships. We're talking mass, some as tall as five stories. They're in the harbor right now. Awesome spectacle, and we're checking it out. Festival comes to Green Bay once about every 3 years. Did you go to the last one? What was a highlight for you? Are you a maritime history buff? What about it excites you? What are you hoping to take away from this year's festival? We're at 800-642-1234 for you to join in. You can also email ideas at WPR.org. Holly Williams is Vice President of Events for PMI Entertainment Group. She oversees the Tall Ships Festival that kicks off in Green Bay today. Holly, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
So give us a taste of this festival with these tall ships. What is this festival all about?
Sure. Well, we work with Tall Ships America, and the tall ships do travel through the Great Lakes every 3 years. So they were last in Green Bay in 2016. And this year, we're very fortunate to have over half of our fleet is new. They've never been to Green Bay before, so that's very exciting for us. So the ships arrived yesterday. They'll be here throughout the weekend, and we have lots of activities. With your ticket, you do get tours on six of the vessels that will be for touring, and we also have three sail-away vessels as well. And we have fireworks tonight and family day on Sunday and the world's largest rubber duck. So there's a little bit for everyone.
Okay, so when you say tall ships, can you give us a portrait, a picture in our mind's eye, what this looks like in Green Bay?
Well, it really is what you think of when you hear tall ships. So they're very large wooden sailing ships. So some of those are exact replicas of what would have been sailing through in the 1800s. And we actually have a picture from the Neville Museum from 1913, from when Niagara actually visited Green Bay back then. And we have the replica here with us today.
So you can go on these ships, you can tour them. Can you describe what you would see when you step foot on a ship?
Sure. All the ships are a little bit different. We have several different types of ships. Like the Santa Maria is an exact replica of the Santa Maria, and it did sail over from Spain. So when you go on board the Santa Maria, it's very period. So you're going to see exactly what that ship would have been like during that time period. It's very historic. It has multiple decks on multiple levels. Then we have the Blue Nose 2 that's coming to us from Nova Scotia, where everything is pretty much on deck or above deck. So some of our ships, they have multiple levels that you can explore, and some of those are more of the traditional ships that are long and everything's on top.
We're talking with Holly Williams. She oversees the Tall Ships Festival that kicks off in Green Bay today. You can join in. 800-642-1234. Is ship watching a tradition for you and your family? How do you make a day of it? This festival comes to Green Bay once every several years. Did you go to the last one? What was a highlight for you? You can call in. Also email ideas at WPR.org. Holly, you mentioned a sail-away ship. What is that?
So we have three ships with us that will be taking out passengers on day sail opportunities. So we have Inland Seas from Traverse City, Michigan, and Windy from Chicago, and those ships are going out on 90-minute day sails. So basically, they'll travel down the Fox River to the mouth of the bay and back, and that takes about 90 minutes. And then we have Appledore 4 coming to us from Bay City, Michigan. And this time around, we decided to do something a little bit different, where we're offering actually a three-hour sailing opportunity, which will allow the ships to go out into the bay and have a longer sail. And we also have a parade of sail, which is a trip from Green Bay to Sturgeon Bay on Monday. So that's an eight-hour sail that you can participate in and go up for a parade of sail through Sturgeon Bay on Monday.
And when you go out on these sails, do you help at all on board with the crew?
Yes, definitely. Every ship is different, but the mission for most of these ships are sail education. So they are very interested in teaching everyone about maritime history, how to physically sail a ship. However, if you want to go and you don't want to sail, you don't have to do that either. So you can enjoy yourself, or you can get as involved as you'd like.
do you have to have some strength to move these sails? Like how much strength is involved here?
Well, these sails are very heavy. A lot of people don't realize how tall these ships actually are. The Blue Nose 2 actually barely made it into Green Bay because they missed the Leo Frigo Bridge by about 8 inches on the way in yesterday.
Ooh,
so that's
okay.
A big sail that goes all the way up there. They're pretty heavy.
Yeah, I mean, do these ships present obstacles like that? Do they cause problems when you try to dock them?
Oh, there are lots of challenges and obstacles along the way. With the Blue Nose, as I mentioned, she actually sailed to us from Bay City, Michigan, with her mast already lowered because we knew that it was going to be tight getting her under the bridge with the water levels as high as they are. And she only had about 2 inches of clearance. So 2 days ago, she was here, but we kept her on the other side of the bridge and actually filled her all the way up with fuel. So she sat a little bit lower in the water. And they sat out there monitoring the water levels for over a day, and then they determined that noon yesterday was the best time, and they came in with 8 inches to spare. So that was interesting. We also have some unique docking challenges in Sturgeon Bay when the ships go up there with just the water levels up there, and we might have to use some very large tractor tires to get the ships away from the dock because the water levels are so high. So there's a couple of the obstacles along the way. But, you know, we spend several years planning this. People think that, you know, they come every 3 years and the ships just show up, but it's it takes a lot of planning, so we overcome a lot of obstacles along the way.
And these ships look very old, from a totally different era. Are they actually in use year-round by a crew and a captain?
They are. Some of the ships do get dry docked during the winter. I don't know exactly which ones do that, but a lot of the ships will actually have a southern port that they go to. I know several ships might go down to the Keys or Puerto Rico in the winter, so they sail down there, so they keep sailing all year round. But some of them, like the Niagara, it does stay in the Great Lakes throughout the winter.
Are these ships privately owned, or who takes care of them? Who's the owner?
Well, it just depends on the ship. Most of the ships that we have this time are nonprofit sailing education companies. So Inland Seas in Traverse City, Michigan has two of the ships that are coming to Green Bay this year. They have Inland Seas and then Utopia. And they do some really interesting sailing programs. And we're offering an ROV workshop, which is a remote operated vehicle. So people can come on board. It's a STEM-based learning opportunity where they will build this remote operated vehicle. And then they'll put out some obstacles in the water. And you'll do an obstacle course and try to capture items. So it's really all about sail education. The Santa Maria is a company in Spain that has multiple ships. But again, most of these are either sailing education or museums.
What do we know about the ship Utopia?
Well, Utopia has a local tie. It was owned by a family up in Sturgeon Bay.
Ah.
And a few years ago, they actually donated to the Inland Seas Education Association. So it's making its first trip back to Sturgeon Bay and Green Bay since it was donated a few years ago.
We're talking about tall ships in Green Bay on this edition of Wisconsin Weekend. Holly Williams is with PMI Entertainment Group, overseeing the Tall Ships Festival that kicks off in Green Bay today. Are you and your family heading out to the event in Green Bay this weekend? What about tall ships appeals to you and your family? What are you most excited about at this year's festival? Join in the conversation, 800-642-1234. We'll get back to more Wisconsin Weekend here in just a moment. Stay with us on the Ideas Network. On a Friday, it is Wisconsin Weekend. I'm Kate Archer-Kent, and we have set sail to Green Bay to check out the Tall Ships event. The Green Bay Downtown Riverfront is where you can see these 9 tall ships that are in the bay right now for this 3-day festival that gets underway today. Do you sail? Where do you go? And how did you learn to sail? What is your boat like? Where do you go? Join in the conversation, 800-642-1234. You can tweet us at WPR Mornings. Holly Williams stays with us. She is overseeing the Tall Ships Festival. So, Holly, when this festival is over, where will the ships sail next? What is their destination?
Sure. Well, the ships depart Green Bay Monday morning, and they're going to travel up to Sturgeon Bay, where they'll sail through and dock overnight on Monday night. And then they will depart Tuesday morning and company and sail over to Algoma. And Algoma will be the starting line for the race to the next port city, which is actually Kenosha. So they will be starting, they'll be traveling down there starting Tuesday, and they will get in on Thursday in Kenosha.
Yeah, explain for us what this challenge is, this Great Lakes Challenge.
Sure. Tall Ships America does coordinate the ship tour through the Great Lakes, as I had mentioned before. And typically they race from port to port as kind of a friendly competition among the ships. So they did not race to us from Bay City, Michigan, but they will be racing onto Kenosha. So on Tuesday, they're going to muster offshore in Algoma, so around noon. They'll probably be about a mile or so offshore, just depending on weather. And this is when they're going to put up their sails and they're going to start the race. So I've heard that they get pretty competitive.
How fast do these ships go when they are at full sail, and how close do the ships get to each other?
Well, they go pretty fast. I'm not sure of the exact speed that they go, but it also depends on the ships and the sizes of the sails. I know like Pride of Baltimore is a pretty fast ship, and I know she gets pretty competitive with Niagara. They stay a little bit away from each other, but they do get probably closer than you think that they might. But these ships are older, they're harder to maneuver, so they don't get as close to each other as like a modern sailing ship might be.
So I understand Pride of Baltimore has covered more than a quarter million nautical miles, 40 countries since its launch decades ago. These ships have been places.
They have. And, you know, Pride of Baltimore, too, is one of those ships that everyone in Green Bay loves. They love to see it. It's been here several times. It's a crowd favorite. But one of the other ships is Picton Castle. And what they do is they circumnavigate the globe. So they just finished up their last circumnavigation in May and traveled back to their home port in Lunenburg, Nova Scotia, even though they fly under the Cook Islands flag. So that's what they do. They just constantly will circumnavigate, and you can sign up to be one of the crew on their ship and go along, learn how to sail, and be a crew member on those sails. They also have a very fun cat named Fiji, and Fiji has quite the social media following, and she was the very first person to get off the ship when she arrived in Green Bay, so she's been wandering around the grounds there.
First person or
first thing, first animal.
Yeah. I mean, Fiji is so popular that you might as well just call her a human, right?
Right, yeah.
Oh, wow. That is amazing. And I guess there's this rubber ducky that is in Green
there
Bay. What's up with the duck?
Yeah, so the world's largest rubber duck will be returning to Green Bay. It was here in 2016, and they actually inflated her overnight. So when I got to the park this morning early, I could see her through the darkness. Mama Duck is about 7 stories high, so she will be the tallest thing in Green Bay this weekend.
And is she out there next to these ships, or is she on land?
Well, in 2016, we had her out in the water, but in 2019, our ships are longer than they were in 2016, so we needed as much dock space as we could get, so she's actually on land this year.
Have you ever had to deal with these types of water levels that you're seeing this year?
No, these are historic water levels. This is not something we've had to deal with in the past. In Green Bay, it's not as much of a problem other than getting under the bridge because our dock walls are pretty tall here. But in Sturgeon Bay, it has been a challenge, especially for the foreign vessels the only dock that they can dock at because of the security levels. So we're getting creative with some docking solutions up there.
When you say the security level, is it because these ships are just out there, or you know, what do you have to secure them for?
Sure. Well, there is lots of security that goes into an event like this. A lot of people don't realize that, you know, I work with all of the entities, the Coast Guard, the local police, the local fire, sheriff's department, the Department of Natural Resources. We enforce a 25-foot security zone around the ships while they're in port. But the security zone that I'm talking about is for the foreign vessels. So any ship that comes in that is not from the United States has to be at a dock that has a certain security port level. And usually those docks are owned by a city, like a city park, a certain city park, or a commercial where they have commercial vessels come in that might be international. So you can't just park an international ship at any docking location, even if it's deep enough. You do have to have a certain clearance.
Is that following like an international maritime law?
They're the Coast Guard regulations.
Coast Guard regulations. Okay.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
We're learning about tall ships with Holly Williams. What goes into this tall ships festival that starts in Green Bay today? You can join in with your questions at 800-642-1234. Holly, what do you think makes maritime history so alluring to people? What kind of mystique does it hold?
Well, especially in Green Bay, I think it's something that they don't see every day. You know, we're not necessarily a sailing community. So when these ships come in, it's something that they don't see often. You know, on the East Coast, some of these wooden schooners, you might see them every day. So it's something that you're just used to. Where in Green Bay, we only see them every 3 years. So it's something that people get really excited about to come see them, even if they've seen the ships before. And all of the crew are just excited to tell their stories, and they're excited to spread the word.
Is this community tight-knit? Do the crews know each other quite well?
They do. They travel from port to port, especially on this tour. They get to know each other very well. And they were very excited when they got into Green Bay, because when they were in Bay City, Michigan, they were actually separated into three different docking locations around the city. And in Green Bay, we have them all docked in one location. So they get to be next to each other. And they like to get to know each other in the evenings. They have some parties. They don't like to get up very early in the morning, as we found with some media this morning. But they are very tight-knit, and actually it's interesting following them from port to port, because sometimes crew will switch with each other. They offer those opportunities to the crew. So someone might, you know, leave on the Picton Castle, but they might come back on the Santa Maria just to get some different training and experiences.
It looks like they also wear some period costumes. I think that was a picture I saw on the Santa Maria.
Yeah, some of them do. I was on board Santa Maria yesterday, and I did see a Christopher Columbus costume there. So some of the ships will dress in period. Some just wear their normal sailing. It just depends on the ship.
What do you love about coordinating this, and what is the challenge that you are up against in putting this together?
Sure. I really enjoy this event because of something different. You know, I'm used to doing events inside, so having the opportunity to do an event outside on the water, it's just something different. And every year it's different. So that's kind of the challenge that I have, is how do I reinvent this event every time it comes to Green Bay so that people want to come back and see it again? We noticed that the demographic was, you know, a little bit older, and we were, you know, brainstorming how can we reach more families and younger demographics, because, you know, these ships are trying to recruit sail trainees and get people interested, new people interested in the industry. So we introduced Family Day back in 2016, and we have the world's largest rubber duck. So Family Day is our highest attended day. So it's really nice just to be able to, you know, brainstorm. This year we've added aerial performers on tonight before the fireworks. So we're always trying to change it up, which is kind of the biggest challenge that I have, other than I'm not a sailor, so learning as much about the ships and the lingo so I can talk to the Coast Guard. There's just a lot of different moving parts.
And so when these ships get to Algoma, there will be some activities there as well, I understand?
Yep. They are having a community festival there on Crescent Beach. And I'm actually working with one of the local fishing charters are going to come out with us to help us with the starting line. So it's kind of nice to get the community involved. And they're super excited to have the tall ships off the shore.
And where can people go to learn more about the festival in Green Bay?
Sure, we can go to tallshipswisconsin.com. That has all the information for Green Bay, and then it also has general information about Sturgeon Bay and Algoma as well.
And we've also put a link on our site as well at wpr.org on the morning show page. Holly, thank you so much for joining us.
Well, thanks for having me.
Holly Williams is Vice President of Events for PMI Entertainment Group. She oversees the Tall Ships Festival that kicks off in Green Bay today. And for disclosure, PMI Entertainment is a business sponsor of Wisconsin Public Radio. It is Wisconsin Weekend here in the morning show. Coming up, we'll dive into Wisconsin's underwater archaeology, and we'll learn about hundreds of shipwrecks here in our state and what they tell us about our history. That is coming up after this news update. Stay with us here on the Ideas Network. We're staying out on the water and exploring Wisconsin's underwater archaeology on this edition of Wisconsin Weekend. I'm Kate Archer Kent. One way we find clues about our history is through shipwrecks. Wisconsin has hundreds of them, and our cold water here preserves materials much better than salty ocean water. And that's why Great Lakes shipwrecks are considered some of the best in the world. What do you want to know about how underwater archaeologists investigate these sites? Do you ever go wreck diving in the Great Lakes? What are some of your favorite spots to explore? We're at 800-642-1234. Kathy Green is an underwater archaeologist and executive director of the Wisconsin Maritime Museum at Manitowoc. Kathy, welcome back to the Ideas Network.
Good morning. Glad to be here.
So when did you decide to become an underwater archaeologist? How did you get into that?
Yeah, well, I was actually working at a maritime museum, the Bermuda Maritime Museum, and there were a group of graduate students coming out to do a project in underwater archaeology. At the time, I didn't even realize that this was something one could do professionally. I had been working in museums and interested in the maritime world, but really looking at the material culture and doing the physical diving and exploring of these sites was new to me, and watching these folks work just really fascinated me and sent me on that track of study.
Well, take us down there. What is it like to explore a shipwreck? How do you do this?
Yeah, well, you know, the first step, and, you know, it's not the most exciting one, but it's the one that probably is most crucial, is before you get in the water, the first thing you're going to do is a lot of historical research, a lot of information gathering to find out about a site. And depending on if you're looking for something new, if you're documenting a known site, and your objectives for that, you're going to approach things a little differently. But as you mentioned, going under the water and getting to the site provides an additional challenge than if you were working on a terrestrial or a land site. So being able to scuba dive, being able to, in some cases on shallow wrecks, just snorkel over them allows you to that access to the archaeological site itself.
And so once you get down there, I'm sure you have tools to be able to document what you're seeing, and cameras. You might have to write things down, I would assume.
Absolutely. And the technology has changed over the years. And actually, just in the last 20 years that I've been doing this, the techniques you would use to document a site there are definitely more tools in the toolbox. But doing that manual visual inspection, doing some measuring, and as you said, doing some documentation, just writing down things underwater, drawing sketches, taking those measurements allows you to get that initial information, things like photography and even more comprehensive data collection through things like digital video and collecting a lot of information very quickly through various technologies allows you to have a good understanding of the site.
Kathy, why are there so many shipwrecks in the Great Lakes?
There are estimated to be over 10,000 shipwrecks in the Great Lakes, so that's an awful lot, over 700 in Wisconsin waters alone. And that has to do with the fact that the Great Lakes were some of the busiest waterways in the world. I mean, they are still very active waterways. But especially in the 19th century and early 20th century, there were thousands of these ships plying the lakes every single day. And so just the volume of shipping meant that a certain percentage of those are going to wreck. And you pile on top of that the environmental conditions here, the opportunities for extreme weather, for operator error, and miscalculations in navigation, collisions, accidents like fire, then that leads to a number of these sites becoming shipwrecks on the bottom.
And I understand some of these ships were intentionally sunk, that was, you know, a way of just getting rid of a ship.
Yeah, so Great Lake ships, as you mentioned, the cold, fresh water is a great preservative. So ships would survive here for quite a few years sometimes, and they would go through different chapters of their lives. So they might start out in one trade, maybe a specific cargo like grain or iron ore, and they might move to some other kind of trade or might even move to being a barge, and eventually they might turn into something like a dock structure and be built upon from there. And it really made more sense at the end of their lives for some of these owners to take them to an out-of-the-way place and just let them sink to the bottom and kind of settle in what are known as graveyard areas, or areas that have these known sites. And if you were someone navigating the lakes, you could avoid those areas.
We're talking with Kathy Green. She is an underwater archaeologist and executive director of the Wisconsin Maritime Museum. You can join in with your questions, 800-642-1234. Do you go scuba diving in the Great Lakes? What kind of discoveries have you happened upon? Or are you considering getting certified so you can make those discoveries? What about this excites you? You can call in, email ideas at WPR.org. Let's go to Rich now, joining us from Summers. Hi, Rich.
Good morning. Hey, without getting off the subject too much, interested in those stone pyramid structures that are in a few lakes around Madison.
So stone, you're wondering about stone pyramid structures. Are they sticking out of Madison Lakes?
No, they're on the bottom.
They're on the bottom. Kathy, do we know anything about these stone pyramid structures?
Well, you know, it's interesting. So shipwrecks are just one submerged cultural site here in the state. There are lots of other ones. And yeah, we're not just talking about Great Lakes. We're talking about sites on inland lakes as well. So there have been lots of other underwater sites found by archaeologists and divers, everything from trading posts, lumber mills, quarries, and then these odd structures, yeah, that you're referencing there. These are kind of, you know what, and I can't say definitively what these are, but these are sites that look like they could be man-made pyramid structures of rock stacked in the bottom of some of these inland lakes, and it's one of those underwater mysteries to what they actually are.
Kathy, when you talk about, like, shipwreck graveyards, are these sites actively explored by underwater archaeologists? Are they well documented?
Well, you know, that's a really great question. And the thing is, there are new sites like this being found all the time. So, yeah, it is an area of active exploration. One of the things lately that's caused a number of these sites to come to light are the clear visibility conditions in the lake, especially early in the spring. And there are a number of folks who like to explore these sites via low-flying aircraft or personal aircraft. So from the air, you can actually find a lot of these shallow abandonment sites and then go back and document them either, again, through visual inspection or by diving to them.
Are there shipwrecks or underwater artifacts that can be traced back to Native American culture and history?
Absolutely. So Native fishing gear and some early watercraft certainly have been found in Wisconsin waterways. dugout canoes are kind of one of those more robust artifacts that folks do come across.
Oh, wasn't there one that was like a couple thousand years old found near Kenosha?
Yes, exactly. So nearly estimated to be nearly 2,000 years old, it was discovered. And again, that those preservation conditions at the bottom of the lakes, especially when things are covered with silt and mud, they can be preserved very, very well. Now, of course, when you bring things out, they begin to deteriorate. So that's one of the reasons that you shouldn't remove things from the water when you find them. But, of course, in the past, and oftentimes with the best intentions, folks have done that. So there are some conservation techniques we can use to stabilize artifacts. These dugout canoes, though, are really interesting artifacts. Often you can see the tool marks of how they were made. And looking at the differences of where they were found and the ages of them, you can tell perhaps who made them or what tribes that they originate from.
So with water levels and currents, do these shipwrecks, do they move much at all, or do they stay put?
Well, you know, if something large, like, say, a Great Lakes schooner that would have been 130 to 170 feet long, if it's in deep water, it's probably going to stay largely where it sank. However, if you're in a more dynamic environment, as you mentioned, where things like waves, ice, and changing currents and water levels might affect a site, yeah, you can absolutely have things moving around. And when we've had all this high water, sometimes that can dislodge pieces from shallow sites and move them around.
So can you tell us about a ship called Home that's in Lake Michigan off the coast of Manitowoc County?
Yeah, the Home's an interesting wreck. It's a Great Lakes schooner, a fairly early one. It was built in 1843, and it sank in 1858. It was lost off of Manitowoc carrying lumber. But an interesting thing about the Home is that early in its career in the 1840s, it did a lot of work on Lake Erie out of Sandusky, Ohio, which was a known endpoint for the Underground Railroad. And the captain of the Home was a known abolitionist and known to be a collaborator for the Underground Railroad, along with a lot of the folks he worked with. And so it is very likely that the Home was used in her career to ferry escaped slaves across the lake into Canada. Now, there was never any documented cases of this, but it is known that that last leg across some of those lower Great Lakes into Canada was how many slaves escaped during that time period.
Talking with Kathy Green, she is our guide and underwater archaeologist. You can join in 800-642-1234. Back in a moment here on the Ideas Network. We're exploring shipwrecks on this edition of Wisconsin Weekend. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Our state is home to more than 700 shipwrecks, but why did so many sink? According to Wisconsin Sea Grant, thousands of ships sailed in and out of our ports, and reaching way back in time, some older, rundown ships were abandoned in shallow water or intentionally set on fire. We're learning about what lies below with your questions, 800-642-1234. Kathy Green is our guide. She's an underwater archaeologist, and she heads up the Wisconsin Maritime Museum at Manitowoc. Kathy, we are talking about Home there. What is your favorite Wisconsin shipwreck to explore?
Well, you know, for me, it's not a single wreck, but examples of these Great Lakes schooners. So schooners were wooden ships and either two or three masts, and they were kind of the semi-trucks of their day. They carried everything around, especially bulk cargoes in the 1800s. They're just really interesting in that the construction is specific to the Great Lakes. Here we have shallow harbors, and the conditions for sailing are different than what they would be on the ocean. So the hull shape is kind of a big boxy shape versus a deep V if you were out on the ocean. And you needed a shallower draft, or less of the boat needs to be in the water because you would need to get in the shallow harbors. And so they developed something called a centerboard that was used here on those schooners. Now, centerboards have been used on vessels all around the world, but the centerboards here were very large, and they allowed these vessels to basically drop a large piece down into the lake to allow you to sail out on deep water safely and efficiently, but be able to pull those up in harbor. It's just a really interesting kind of construction, and there are lots of examples here, especially in this kind of mid-Lake Michigan coastline. There's one, in fact, it's the earliest known shipwreck in Wisconsin called the Galley Nipper off the Manitowoc area. It's in deep water. It's in over 200 feet, and it's sitting upright on the bottom. Just a great example of this kind of construction. And when you dive sites like this, it's really easy to imagine yourself walking on the decks of those ships. What's really cool, I think, this weekend is you can, if you're not a diver, you can get an idea of what that might be like by seeing some of those schooners and other sailing ships up in Green Bay at the Tall Ships Festival.
Yes, you can. So where can people go to learn more about all the latest archaeological discoveries in the Great Lakes? What is a good resource?
Well, you can come to the Wisconsin Maritime Museum, of course. We have an exhibit about these shipwrecks there, and talks about, and not only in the exhibit do we talk about the wrecks themselves, but there's a lot of hands-on interactives talking about how we document these sites, about underwater archaeology, some of the more high-tech tools like ROVs, underwater robots, and how we use those to explore the site. Looking online, absolutely fantastic resource is a website through the Wisconsin Historical Society called Wisconsin Shipwrecks, and it's just wisconsinshipwrecks.org. They do fantastic work here at the state of Wisconsin, one of the best programs in the country for underwater archaeology. And you can look up the history of these sites. There are wonderful photographs and site plans of many of the shipwrecks here in Wisconsin.
And it's all these shipwrecks so well documented on that site. You can just get lost in there looking at shipwreck after shipwreck. Yeah. Well, Kathy, this has been fun. Thank you so much for joining us. We really appreciate it.
Oh, I'm so happy to do it. Thank you.
Kathy Green is an underwater archaeologist. We've been learning about hundreds of shipwrecks here in Wisconsin, and Kathy is the executive director of the Wisconsin Maritime Museum at Manitowoc. And now it is time for Wisconsin Life. Here's producer Maureen McCollum with a visit to a summer celebration.
Wisconsin is known for throwing cultural and church festivals all summer long. And today, we're going to talk about one particular celebration, Greek Fest Plus in Madison, hosted every July by Assumption Greek Orthodox Church. Carol Griskovich talked with festival organizers about the history of the annual fest, their food, and the community.
It's my understanding that still, and I was digging into this, that we are the longest running ethnic festival in Madison. It's a Greek Fest Plus because we want to really honor all of the diverse ethnicities in our community. But it's really a reunion. It's a block party. It's a community event. And especially last year, people would come up to me and say they've never felt more welcome at a festival in Madison as they have at Greek Fest.
For many years, this was the only Eastern Christian church in this part of Wisconsin. And so as a consequence, all the Orthodox people from all over the world who lived in central and southern Wisconsin came here to this church, and they still do.
Jason, hey, happy birthday to your father.
Oh yeah, I didn't even say that yet.
Well, the church was started, it was incorporated with the state of Wisconsin in 1951, and it was a group of primarily Greek immigrants that relocated here in the Madison area that began the church.
My grandfather came at age 16 with some male relatives, and they began working on the railroad. They settled in Madison and opened up a restaurant, the Coney Island. First, it was located, I believe, on the 700 block of State Street, and then later it moved to the 300 block of State Street.
Oh, should we just get like a variety pack?
Hi. Can I have 4 baklava, please?
And we brought back this year the traditional Coney dog, Coney Island dog, which is how so many of the Greek immigrants made their living coming to America. And they brought with them the secret, the spices and the cumin and the cinnamon and to add to this puree sauce that gets spooned over a hot dog. I'm going to leave one spice out, just so no one knows. We've got cayenne, cloves, cinnamon, of course, oregano, of course, paprika, allspice, and a mystery spice. Garlic powder, onion powder, butter. Actually, butter is what caught me off guard with the recipe. It's like it's going to give it a really kind of a thick richness. We're going to cook it down so it's thick. We're going to puree it, so it's not chili sauce. This is Coney sauce. It's very specific to Greek immigrants.
Have you sampled the Coney sauce that we are using during Greek Fest? Because from what I have been told, we're using your father's recipe.
I have not, because I have never been fond. Isn't that terrible? Our bread and butter, and I was never fond of the chili sauce.
That's who we are as the church, who we are as Orthodox Christians. That familial bond that we already have through our worship is just transferred out into the celebration of our ethnic heritage and bringing of all of these people together. 2 days of this huge festival that just brings our excitement for one another out.
That was Georgiana Wilton, Father Michael Vanderhoof, David Giffey, and Patty Notes. Music by Rhythmos and Sergei Belkin. That story was brought to us by WPT's Carol Griskovich, who is also a member of the church. Wisconsin Life is a co-production of Wisconsin Public Radio and Wisconsin Public Television in partnership with the Wisconsin Humanities Council. Additional support comes from Lowell and Mary Peterson of Appleton. Find more Wisconsin Life at wisconsinlife.org and on Facebook. I'm Maureen McCollum.
Wisconsin Life is part of our weekly edition of Wisconsin Weekend here on The Morning Show. What's happening in your part of the state that could reach all corners of Wisconsin? Send your ideas for Wisconsin Weekend. We'd love to see them. mornings@wpr.org. That address is mornings@wpr.org, and we'll explore your tip for a future Wisconsin Weekend program. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. It is The Morning Show. You're listening to the Ideas Network.